please the court, counsel. Joe and Jesse Whitlock were arrested and spent 4 days in jail without bond before they were transported to the Porter County Jail for their initial hearing. They didn't appear at their initial hearing, but their attorney, when he did get a chance to present, got the case dismissed with prejudice. The trial court found, based upon all the evidence, that Conservation Officer Sean Brown did not send his case report, nor that of Officer Santiago, to the prosecutor.
Well, actually, there's a dispute about that, and district court judges don't make findings on summary judgment, or they're not supposed to.
Judge Sykes, I have hearing aids. I'm trying to have. Yes, there is a dispute, but not in the record. In other words, there is a reference to a passing remark that I made, but there's no testimony, sworn testimony, in the record, except for that of Officer Sean Brown. But as the trial court said, that uncorroborated testimony is insufficient. There was a lot of information to refute that. The report that he supposedly sent was actually signed and dated after he allegedly or did send at least the affidavit and the information. Secondly, the court certified copy of the entire file of Joe and Jesse Whitlock did not contain any such incident report or case report. And third, the parties attempted to gather information from the prosecutor of Porter County and were told in 2006 that the entire file had been destroyed.
Why isn't his deposition testimony enough to make a tribal issue effect? I mean, the jury may think that you've got documents that should be there and he just said it, but I don't understand this notion of self-serving. I mean, I think every time a witness either testifies in a deposition or writes an affidavit, it's self-serving to some extent, but why isn't that enough? I don't understand that.
Well, I think that in the summary judgment process, you have to come forward with more than just your allegation. You have to come forward with something more than just your statement. You're quite correct. What I found in Judge Sharp's opinion is that he didn't rely upon that fact one way or the other. In other words, he didn't even mention Saussure, the very controlling case law that should dictate how this case should be analyzed is not even referred to in his opinion. In fact, he creates a hybrid of his own on page 12 of his decision. The determination of qualified immunity is a two-part inquiry where the law was clearly established at the time of the alleged violation and two, whether reasonably competent officials would agree on the application of clearly established right to a given set of facts. And I don't think that's what Saussure says, nor is it really amplified in any helpful way by Pearson, which came down most recently, which does give the courts, I think, some latitude.
Well, I don't understand. Why did they spend 4 days in jail? It would be entitled to a hearing within 48 hours.
Well, because the arrest took place in their county of residence, and the warrant was issued in a county that was up near the lake. So they had to stay there until they were transported, and the transportation was going to be at...
They couldn't ask for a hearing?
They did ask. They were not allowed to. They were told that they had to go up to Porter County.
I'm complaining about that. I mean, there is a strong presumption that you're entitled to a probable cause hearing within 48 hours.
I don't know who you complain to about that, Judge. And then the person you complain to would be the prosecutor and the judge who would then have, immunity.
You're entitled to them. If they asked for a hearing, they would have been entitled within 48 hours.
Again, if they're denied that, qualified immunity for a judge and a prosecutor makes that moot. I mean, that's clear. Embler versus Pacman says you can't touch them.
What are you saying? You've lost me.
Well, I think your question was, if they had asked for this, they should have gotten it. And I'm saying, who would they ask it of, which would be the prosecutor or the court? In either instance, their refusal to set a hearing is a judicial act that would be absolutely immune under Embler versus Pacman and its subsequent cases. In other words, that's a judicial decision, even to set a hearing. So there's no point in suing somebody that can't even be held liable. What we did was, in this particular case, we looked at the facts surrounding the arrest.
There's no judicial remedy if you're denied your due process right to a prompt hearing?
That's not a damage remedy. That's an appeal from a denial of a hearing that you wanted to have, and then you might come back down and then it would be, irrelevant after 4 days anyways. You'd never get a result that would be timely. In this particular case, Judge Sharp did not even refer to the fact in his decision about this hybrid test that he applied to find qualified immunity. He's not even referring in his decision the controversy that you raised, whether or not that case report or incident report was included in the material sent to the prosecutor. It was irrelevant. What did matter is that the affidavit, which Officer Brown composed himself in his own hand, and the information was all that the trial court had.
That be part of your damages, though, the 4 days in jail?
It would be. Of course it would be. The delay and the consequence, because it's very foreseeable. If you arrest somebody out of county, which happens in this case, I would imagine, a lot, because the people visiting the Dune State Park...
is that this conversion statute is very broadly worded. And if this officer thinks, you know, picking up someone else's stuff and keeping it for several hours, that sounds like an unauthorized appropriation of someone else's stuff. If he thinks that, and, you know, isn't that within the bounds of the reasonable?
If he had sent his entire report, then we would have a judicial determination of whether or not there was probable cause. But there's as we've itemized in our brief, there's a number of case laws and controlling cases in this circuit, including the Northern case, which says that you can't have probable cause to have probable cause. That's sort of an unworkable concept.
Well, then what is the concept of qualified immunity in an arrest case?
Under Saussure, if you apply the qualified immunity standard, you first have to establish that there's a constitutional right in question. This is a right
yes,
not to
yes,
be...
Yes, yes, we know about that.
Okay. And then the second part is whether the law was clearly established, and we believe whether the law was clearly established to include
all the exonerating information. And then what is left? And then there's no... If the law is clearly established, then there's no qualified immunity? Is that what you're saying?
If the law is clearly established and you can show that this officer withheld information which was exculpatory and that he did so willfully or intentionally, and what the trial court said was there is no evidence, and nobody produced any evidence, that the prosecutor even reviewed this or that the court... certainly didn't have it in its file, and that would have been the official record because we had a certified copy. This trial court found that there was no probable cause.
Actually, I don't think that's what he said. I think what he said was, let me just get it here, he says, to be clear, the court does not find that based on the circumstances of this case there did not exist probable cause to arrest the Whitlocks. Rather, the court simply finds that there was not a proper determination of probable cause. That's on page 11 of his opinion.
Yes.
So he's saying, I didn't think there was a proper determination. He's basing that on the fact that he's rejecting this notion that he could create an issue of fact on the basis of his deposition. That's a strange concept to me that you can't, I mean, what if it's a he said, she said situation? Why is your deposition not a credible way to present your evidence?
It is, but you have to still have some corroborating information, and if the judge wants to weigh it, then at least he should be denying summary judgment. But instead, he went beyond that. And that's what I don't understand either. He sort of created a hybrid of what summary judgment is about and picked and chose what he wanted to look at.
There's no question that was a mistake. But the heart of this case is whether the officer in question, Officer Brown, willfully withheld information from his report. And the report is both the case report here, and there's an affidavit of probable cause that he submitted to secure the arrest warrant. And the affidavit of probable cause is bare bones, almost no factual allegations whatsoever.
Right.
The incident report contains more detail about his investigation, but it still omits what is the most relevant information about the intent element of this offense, which is the one that's in dispute, or would be eventually, and that is the Whitlocks' explanation for why they had this stuff in their car for 4 or 5 hours, and their explanation was it was a mistake. We forgot it was there.
Right.
We left the park to go do some shopping. When we realized we had it, we resolved to go back. We, made a stop or two on the way, but then we eventually got back to the park and returned it, and there's corroborating evidence of that by virtue of their having called the property owner's phone and leaving a voicemail saying, we've got your stuff, we're taking it to the guard shack, and he omits all of that, even from the more detailed report.
Right. He admits a lot.
If that was done intentionally or with reckless disregard for the truth of that, then he has committed a constitutional violation and is not immune.
And I think that's the point we make, Judge. I see the letter, the light's on, if I could respond to that. John Brown did not even list Neil Koloff as a witness. Now, how are they going to prove any of those elements without him as a witness? Now, they could have amended that, but that's just one example of how this was so casual and indifference. And we think the motive was, if you want a motive, he talks about his religious beliefs and lecturing this witness, and if you look through his entire testimony, he's done that before. Now,
he admitted in his deposition that he was told this explanation by the Whitlocks multiple times. They said in their depositions that they repeated the story over and over again.
Many times.
And he admitted that.
He admitted that. And he called back again after he allegedly had talked to Mr. Neil Koloff and said, Densimeter, and he said, just tell me one more time. And they said the same thing. And he got this, Whitlock's got this God lecture thing again. And so what we think, what has happened is he just put it in motion. He pushed it down the hill. And there is no evidence except his testimony, Judge Dow, that and that may be enough, but it certainly isn't enough for them to be granting them to obtain summary judgment on qualified immunity. As the court has said in Northern and many other cases, if you're talking about what a reasonable person is going to do and you want to give the benefit of this officer some doubt, he at least has to be held to the contents, or the requirement rather, of the contents of his report, and he didn't submit that. I mean, there's no evidence that he submitted that, other than his own word. And we have plenty of information to show that it didn't show up. That is, the signing of the supervisor was after the date that he filed the charges. And the prosecutor would not even talk to me.
Okay.
Over with.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Sutherland. Ms. Barrow?
May it please the court. The issue of the case report is a red herring in this case. This is an issue that the Whitlocks presented in their motion for summary judgment based on the fact that the trial court's file didn't have a copy of the case report. They would ask the court to infer from that the case report wasn't sent in at all. Now, contrary to Judge Sharp's opinion, the inferences have to be drawn in favor of the non-moving party, who in that case was Officer Brown. It's not a reasonable inference based on the record, for one thing. Their complaint actually alleged that he completed a case report and submitted it and submitted it with his affidavit.
That's not evidentiary.
I understand. However, it does, speaking of inferences, how would they have even known about this case report if they hadn't gotten it from the prosecutor? And that is indicated at the deposition. The state's counsel said, well, we didn't give you the case report. And counsel for the Whitlocks indicated, well, we must have gotten it from the prosecutor. And the further, it's not even a logical allegation that he didn't send in the case report, as if he thought that the case report would have totally exonerated them, and he would have been disappointed if they weren't charged with conversion. So the bare-bones affidavit, supposedly, was going to get them arrested instead of the full case report. And that's not even a logical inference, in addition to the fact that it does appear that the case report was submitted to the prosecutor because the plaintiff probably got it from the prosecutor.
Well, even assuming the case report was sent to the prosecutor and was the basis for the issuance of the arrest warrant and the information in this case, the case report omits their explanation for why they had this property and held on to it for several hours. And
Your Honor,
that goes to the heart of the intent element of this crime.
I understand, except I don't know what page of the appendix the court's looking at, but it appears on page 65, Officer Brown indicates that he followed up on their information that they had attempted to call Mr. Koloff, and that Mr. Koloff confirmed that, yes, they left him a message. So at least indirectly, that would corroborate their testimony that they tried to.
It doesn't contain any of their explanation that this was just a mistake, that they forgot that the bags were in their truck because they were in the midst of an argument with their daughter on their way out of the park, and then they belatedly realized they had it and then returned to the park and turned it in. That is critical evidence of a lack of a mens rea to commit this crime.
Well, that is what he does report is that they told him that they simply forgot. They left the park with it and then turned it in when they got back.
That's not in here, counsel.
Well,
it's not in here. It says that they left the park to go shopping, but it's not. None of their innocent explanation is in here. It's a chronology of what happened, but the innocent explanation is not here, and it's on the basis of the innocent explanation that I assume the charges were dropped.
Again, if the question assumes that the prosecutor did look at this case report, and so the prosecutor wouldn't know.
Well, you're
they
arguing
say
that the prosecutor did.
I beg your pardon?
That's your argument, that the prosecutor had it and looked at it.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry. I thought the question was, even if the prosecutor looked at it, it didn't contain their explanation that they got in an argument and forgot. And, again, that I would argue that Officer Brown probably didn't think that that was relevant, that not putting that in would somehow detract from the finding of probable cause.
What evidence is there of criminal intent here?
Well, the criminal intent, of course, for purpose of a conviction, apparently is lacking. I mean, all we know is that
it's nice to know you have so little crime in Indiana that you can prosecute people for these ridiculous, or that you can arrest people for on such a ridiculous basis.
Well, the court might find that Officer Brown was overzealous in protecting the campers of the Indiana State Dunes Park. However, the facts do show that they entered this guy's campsite and took his stuff. And they left. In the meantime, he reports it's stolen. And then when they get back, they have an excuse that they got in an argument and forgot to turn it in. Officer Brown doesn't even have to believe that.
He doesn't have to believe it, but he has to have some evidence of criminal intent, and there isn't any, even assuming all this information went to the prosecutor.
Well, the statute says that conversion is where a person knowingly or intentionally exerts unauthorized control over the property of another, and they intentionally.
This can't be literally true, right? Suppose you pick up. Suppose someone drops a glove. You see someone dropped a glove, and you pick it up and hand it to the person. So is that unauthorized? You haven't been authorized by the person to pick up his glove. You didn't see it fall. That's a crime in Indiana?
Well, it would be authorized because, you know, the person is there and would want you to pick it up and return it.
But that's true in this case also.
No, because the state has never agreed that.
Well, you might not agree when someone picked up a glove that someone had dropped. You might have zealous Officer Brown saying, well, it's true you returned it, but maybe you changed your mind. Maybe when you first picked it up, you were going to steal it. There's only one glove, but you have only one hand.
Well, this is not a case where the Whitlocks found a glove on a hiking trail, for example. They entered somebody's campsite and took his stuff. And their explanation later was they forgot to turn it in.
Campsite? What does that mean?
Well, the belongings were on his campsite.
They entered some enclosed area. I mean, they're all. I don't understand you.
True.
They're
all. And as Officer Brown explained at his deposition.
That, I must say, that upsets me. I'm going to be careful when I. Certainly careful when I drive through Indiana next.
Well, to the extent the moral is to be careful, that if you're a camper, you don't pick up other people's things. And Officer Brown testified
well,
that this is
you,
how.
Let me ask you this. Would it have been criminal conversion if this couple had picked up the bags and not forgotten on the way out of the park that they had them in the back of the truck and had, in fact, stopped at the guard shack before leaving the park and turned them in? Would that have been criminal conversion?
No.
Okay.
I don't think so.
About just the leaving of the park with the property, and that's when the act of conversion occurred?
Well,
and their explanation for that is we forgot. It was a mistake.
And they said that they forgot. And, again, that was their side of the story.
But there isn't any evidence to support an alternative version. That's
well,
the problem.
Well, but what we're talking about is probable cause and their side of the story.
This is so ridiculous. You mean there was going to be some lengthy investigation by the district attorney to find out whether what? Whether they had intended to steal it, and then they changed their mind? Is that what you're going to have? It's so unreal, all of this.
Well, that is exactly what Officer Brown thought, that they might have intended to steal it and found there was nothing of value.
Did he really think that the local prosecutor was going to investigate and try to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that they intended to steal it and then changed their mind?
Well, the prosecutor... why did the prosecutor then refer it to the magistrate for a warrant?
That's an excellent question. It must mean, as you say, there's no crime in Indiana, so you're busy arresting people for non-existent crimes.
Well, I will conclude with two things. Is that first of all, I think this court can affirm on the basis in the record that there was probable cause. But even if there wasn't, I would argue that the court was right, that reasonable officers could disagree.
Well, is that the correct standard, probable cause to believe probable cause? Is that the correct legal standard?
The Humphrey versus Stasek case, in other cases, have said that if there's not probable cause, you can still... ask whether reasonable officers, it's still an objective test, could have disagreed.
Are those warrant cases or are those warrantless arrest cases?
I beg your pardon?
Are those warrant cases or cases of warrantless arrests?
Okay, I don't remember.
There's a distinction here. We've got a warrant that was issued, and so our question is focused on the officer's conduct in submitting information to secure the warrant. And the law is very clear that if he intentionally withheld information that would have had an impact on the probable cause determination, that's a constitutional violation.
If I can address that, the so-called self-serving testimony from the deposition, he had no idea that he was going to be accused of withholding his case report. That accusation came after he said, yes, he submitted his affidavit and his case report. So he had no way of knowing that was even going to be an issue in this case. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Do you have anything further, Mr. Sutherland? I think his time expired. Yeah, your time expired.
One quick question.
That's okay. We've heard enough. Thank you.